This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasothi. It's a Friday, only means it's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, on the line with me. How are you today, George?
Well, excited that it is the end of the year now, isn't it? This is the last Friday of September. We're venturing into October next. Can you believe how time flies?
It is, George. I mean, you know, I have no idea what happened this year, really. A whole load of lockdowns, whole load of COVID cases. I know a lot of us got vaccinated. What else do you remember?
Well, I remember lots and lots of exercise during the lockdowns. I think that's something that I probably will change my lifestyle a lot. And also, I remember a lot of optimism that was dampened by Xiaoying's kind of pouring cold water every time I said, look, we're probably reaching the end of the crisis now. We can see light at the end of the tunnel. She kind of said, nah, I don't think so. But this time, you know, we really see the number coming down. And then also, hopefully, I mean, there's, after all, 2.17 million Malaysians had COVID, and then how that impact on you long term and that sort of thing. I think even though at the end of this crisis, there may be some aftermath, which are important topics we need to talk about.
Yep. So Minister Khairi Jamaluddin recently reported that almost 65% of category 4 and 5 patients from Hospital Sungai Buloh have what you call long COVID as a result of contracting COVID-19 since it sort of hit Malaysia. So there's a lot of talk about what we call long COVID. On the line with us, helping us understand, Dr. Ashari Yunus. He's a consultant pulmonologist from Institut Jantung Negara. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ashari. How are you today?
Well, thank you. I'm okay. And as usual, it's my practice to see patient, including COVID patients.
Yeah. You know, we're wondering, IJN, you always think of heart, right? You have heart disease, you go there. But it's interesting that you're on as a pulmonologist to talk about long COVID. I mean, what sort of patients do you see coming through at IJN?
Yeah, patients usually coming for the heart problem initially, then the patient after that having the contacted by the COVID infection. That's why I end up with the COVID, lung COVID to these patients.
Okay. So there's been a lot of talk, Dr. Ashari, about happy hypoxia. We've had this discussion in previous shows. Can you help us understand why our oxygen levels drop in COVID-19 infection and why, you know, we've been advised to have a pulse oximeter to monitor your oxygen, concentration rates?
Usually, the definition of hypoxia is usually if the SpO2, we call the SpO2 less than 95%, then you have to do the arterial blood gases to monitor, to know that exactly what's the your oxygen in your body. So if the 90% and below, usually patients might mild breathless when the patient walk, or we call the mild initiation. But if less 90, definitely patients are usually breathless at rest. So this is the situation that we should look when we saw the COVID patient, whether the involved the lung or not. And usually the oxygen level low as a result of the lung involvement. So how many percent are lung involved? Usually if less than 50%, then patient might suffer to the hypoxia.
Okay. And we all know COVID-19 affects the lungs and the respiratory system in general. Yeah. The lung gets affected first. You want to explain that process to us, how the virus attacks the lung first?
Yeah. The virus, you know that usually virus is floating, sometimes floating in the air, then your friend might have the virus, you were infected by the virus, you don't know. When they're talking or sneezing and you are nearby, the patient, the virus can go to your to your lung via the nose and the throat and go to the lung, then especially at the alveoli of the lung. So when they infected with that, they cause the inflammation, or we call it the infection of the alveoli inflammation, and depend on the how severe the viral load go to your lung. If there are a lot of viral load, mean the lung may be above a lot of the space in the lung. And you know that the lung is very big, as like the tennis field. It's very, very big. So it depends how many percent of the lung involved. And if the lung involved very big, if the barrel is so many, virus go into the lung, so many. So the chances to get infected all the lungs very, very high. And also other thing that depend on the virulence of the virus. If the virus is virulent, then the lung is very easily, yeah.
Dr. Ashari, is it fair to say that every single sufferers of COVID infection will actually have their lungs affected?
Yes, I think, yeah, what I can say, yes, they go to the lung first. And there's no other way to go to the your body except go to your air, get to the lung, then spread to the other system.
With that in mind, how many proportions of people will have some degree of acute and some degree of chronic inflammations after such involvement?
Yeah. I mean, so depend on the how the people protect the virus go to your lung. For example, people might use the mask or got distance from the patient. We don't know that one. And some people might have their own immunity. So they have made defense that in your body. Then the virus, chances the virus will get infected the lungs less compared to those that low immunity or no not using the mask in the practice. Yeah.
So there are short-term lung issues and longer-term lung issues. You want to just go through short-term lung issues?
Yeah. The short-term lung issue is we call this patient might having the fever, cough, that's common, and the patient might be breathless. And the same thing when the patient having the long-term lung issue, they might patients that has no fever. But the patient might still coughing and still breathless while walking, especially the breathlessness on walking. That's the comments that I've seen in patients.
Yeah. So in Sungai Buloh, the most, based on follow-up monitoring, the most common symptoms were fatigue, which is 79.2%, breathing difficulties when performing certain activities, 52.6%, many have a cough, which is 17.2%, insomnia, 14.6%, and anxiety of 10.6%. So those with breathing difficulties, will they recover eventually, Dr. Ashari?
It depends on the each initial stage. So how do you protect this inflammation of the lung at the early stage? I think the role of steroid is very important early stage when you have COVID infection, and we give the steroid to prevent the further inflammation, further damage of the lung. If the steroid can control it, I think the long-term complication that not that much. What I have seen that the steroid not all control the inflammation. I think some of the steroid only about 30 to 40% control the inflammations. It's not all. So if the lung infected very, very huge infected, very involved the whole lung, then the steroid this doesn't really reverse back to the lung back to normal.
Okay. Do we know why some people steroids will protect the lungs and some, for some people it doesn't?
We don't know yet how the steroid work in the COVID-19. What we know that is the steroid just prevent inflammation of this virus.
Okay, in the lung. So for some people, yes, for some people it doesn't. Then there are possible long-term problems for those with COVID-19, right? What causes these long-term issues in terms of lung damage? What happens to the lung?
In the long term, then when got inflammation, some of the inflammation goes to the, we call it organizing pneumonia. So pneumonia in the lung. Then after that, if it's not recovered, then we call it lung fibrosis or scar in the lung. Or some of the patient might having the blood clot in the primary in the artery in the lung. So this is the two main issues that we face there in the long term. One is lung fibrosis or scar in the lung. Number two is the blood clot in the lung. These two issues that give rise to patient breathlessness and give rise to patient not comfortable when they are walking or when they do their activities.
So you can recover and have a blood clot in your lung? Is that what you're saying?
That the blood clot is a thing that may recover compared to the lung fibrosis. So the, we give the certain, we call anticoagulant to the patient, they may recover. But the lung fibrosis is very difficult. When the lung damage and develop a scar, then the lung is not recovered.
Can I ask, I'm sorry, Georgia, go ahead.
I mean, Dr. Ashari, can you just explain, is there any similarity you find between the changes in the lungs for COVID-infected patient compared to, let's say, other medical conditions such as cystic fibrosis or asthma? Can you draw any parallelity so that we learn how to treat it better?
Yeah, certainly that we can differentiate by ask the patient all the thing. But when you look at the x-rays and certain that we call the CT scan of the chest, then they have certain sign, changes that we can see. That we can say, oh, this one due to COVID-19 is not due to the cystic fibrosis.
I understand, but so there's specific characteristics that you can detect from imaging. Is there a similarity with other lung conditions?
Yeah, as in if it can be mistaken for other sort of lung conditions.
Yes, we can. There has similar changes, but I think by looking specifically, we are based on our history taking and also based on our clinical finding that, oh, this one, we look the imaging, based on that, we can send copy. But of course, we have few differential when look the imaging alone. But by supporting by the history and the simulation, then we can say that this lung changes due to COVID-19.
Okay.
Of course, if you say that, if you look the lung alone, okay, if I say that I have no history and no information or from the patient or from the my examination, then I say this few differential could be. One is probably lung changes, lung fibrosis could be due to other thing like the idiopathic primary fibrosis, for example, or the cystic fibrosis. These are the changes that we might make a differential to exclude one by one the end. We say that this is the diagnosis of the patient.
Okay. And did you just say that the lung is the size of a tennis court? I mean, is that what you said just now? Is it the size of a tennis court, did you say?
Yes. If you open the lung is like the size of a tennis court.
Half, is it?
Half of a tennis court.
Right. Okay. And when you do get COVID, does it affect both lungs or does it depend on
how bad? Effect on both lungs, actually.
It affects both. Okay. We'll come back and find out more about, I think the question at the back of most of our minds are, you know, whether or not this damage in the lung is actually reversible. Dr. Ashari has spoken about lung fibrosis, right? The scarring of the lung, that's very hard for it to recover. But can you actually reverse that damage? That's coming up next. If you have a question on long COVID, meaning recovery post-COVID, give us a call. The number is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, co-hosting with me, together with Dr. Ashari Yunus, consultant pulmonologist from Institute Jantung Negara. We're discussing recovery after COVID-19. What's actually next for most of us, right? So we have a question here via WhatsApp, and the question is, if a patient has 75% scarring of the lung, does that mean the scarring won't reduce at all, or that the scarring may reduce, but it won't completely disappear? Your answer, Dr. Ashari? Yeah,
that's a good question, that 70% of the lung involved with scarring. So when the lung got scarred, it's very difficult for the lung back to normal. And this usually occurred about after 2 weeks, and to after 2 weeks of infection. And when you have this, it won't reverse to a normal lung, and then you might have breathlessness because you need at least 50% of the normal lung to be, you need for the good breathing. So if in both of them 50% is really a unique help by taking the oxygens to your body. Yeah.
So you So more than 50% scarring, then you're going to have bigger issues to deal with.
Yeah. You need if more than 50%, usually you need oxygen to supplement it. Yeah.
Dr. Ashari, how much lung function or how many percent of lung function do you need to be compatible with life?
Good question. So I think at least 50%. Because we look at it like this. If you look the because I'm both in the lung transplant. So if you do lumpectomy, you remove out one lung, you can survive with one lung. And that's why if we predict that if the percent involved the lung, then the patient might breath less, more than 50%. So the patient can survive with one lung, yeah. But the lung is not normal, it's going to bloated and inflated. You know that lungs are like balloon, so it can inflate bigger and bigger. It depends on the demand, your body demand. If you demand a lot of oxygen, then lung can bigger and bigger, yeah.
Okay. Who's at more at risk at developing serious long-term complications from COVID-19?
The patient dose has patient on the steroid. For example, patient COPD or bronchial asthma, they got prone. Number two, patient elderly, who the immune system is not that good. And number three, could be due to any patients on the chemo treatment. Chemotherapy, we call on the cancer drugs that make prone to get infection, or for those patients too obese, then they make a prone infection. I think this category of people that might prone to get infection.
I'm sure you would like to mention smoking as well, right?
Yes, that's right. I forgot.
Can you tell me impact of smoking? I mean, for smokers, their susceptibility for COVID and also the percentage of them may have long-term adverse outcome following the infections.
Yeah. So what happened is smokers, that all this nicotine can cause the damage of the track, that is basically track. So if got infection, then this virus get easily go to the your alveolus from the respiratory tract, go to alveolus. So it's no protection. Usually the we call the in the respiratory tract, we call the cilia. You can move all the some of the virus, some of the toxic agent to the patient. Then if you smoke, then all this in the respiratory tract, the cilia that damage, and easier for the virus to go to your lung. That's the reason.
So the cilia is affected by the smoking, and then it reduces your protection when you actually get COVID-19. Are there steps that we can take to minimize potential lung damage, perhaps?
I think the lungs, to protect it, of course, they're protected by the using the mask to avoid the all this toxic agent go to your body, avoid the virus go to your body. That's very important. I think no other way how to protect the lung when something go into your body.
Mm-hmm. Getting vaccinated might help, don't you think? Dr. Ashari, getting vaccinated might help?
Vaccinated, you help? Yeah. The vaccinations might be helpful because they protect. Because when you have the vaccination, let's say COVID-19 vaccine, give to the body, to the people. So immunity is increased. So when the same virus goes to your body, then this antibody might be protect. This virus caused the lung damage.
I mean, Dr. Ashari, I mentioned earlier on that, you know, amongst all the listeners out there, there are so many people, I'm sure, are quite keen to ask you this question.
Yeah.
You know, there are 2.1 million people who are affected. Presumably, most of them recovered unscathed from this. And then some of them may have some mild degree of respiratory problem, and others may have debilitating problems afterwards. For the mild degree ones, is it safe to say that they're home and safe now, that they should not have any more long-term pulmonary problems in the future?
To answer the question, I have experienced that for those patients in the category one and in category two came to see me because they are coughing and breathless. And when I did the investigation, when do the chest x-rays and do the pre-person test, and also I'm a proceed to HRCT, there is an infected, the lung may be infected, but it's not that bad compared to the category three and four. So I can say that the people can live normally without knowing that what's behind, what's the lung. I think the lung, when you get infected, the lung may be damaged. Not that very big, but it's only 10% or 5% of the part of lung. Yeah.
First of all, for this group of patients, is there any advice you can give them so that they can continue to preserve their lung functions?
Yeah, I think what we need to do is some exercise. It's very important because the exercise, because as I mentioned just now, it's a lung like a balloon. So this to exercise to make your the chest wall muscles get them better, and then also diaphragm is moving very well. So this can help in terms of breathing. So if if the exercise that might be help you in terms of the lungs getting better and the function is getting better, but it's not changes in the lung. The changes if the lung is already damaged, it's already damaged. We cannot improve on that one.
Okay. So a lot of it is irreversible.
Yeah, irreversible. That's right. Yeah, you're right.
So for second group of patients, let's say presumably the one who are on stage three, then eventually remain reasonably healthy. They can function daily, but they suffer from some mild degree of problems. What sort of medication or what sort of treatment is available so that they can continue to improve on their lung functions?
So I think in terms of medication, they have at the moment no medication to help to improve their lung damage. So let's take category three. Depend on the how many percent of the involved. If the involved about 30%, then they can be could be normal in their activities. But they might not know that the lung damage. I think the better for this category three, especially go and check to the see doctors in the hospital to make sure they are the lung damage, how many percent they have the lung damage. I think very important.
Okay. And the final group of patients, let's say the one who were on category four and then basically have permanent lung scarring. I mean, what sort of like a life do they have ahead of them, and what sort of advice would you give them?
Okay, I think the category four is really they say category four and they send home and patients getting better and they do some activities and can do something, but they have limited activities. So I advise that use the pulse meter to check to monitor the oxygen. And if the oxygen less than 90, I think they should come to hospital again to look at what we should do to the patient. So basically, we do some the pulmonary rehab to the patients, and by using the tools to help in terms of the breathing, and sometimes we clear the airways of the patients, and also we give to make sure that the condition is very good. That's what we can do more on the medication to reverse the lung parenchyma. Yeah.
So using a pulse oximeter even post COVID is helpful. That gives you an idea of how your lung is actually coping, right?
Yeah. Yes. I think. Sure. Pulse oximeter very useful. Yeah.
Sure. So recently, YBKJ said that the hospital Sungai Buloh will be providing rehabilitation services for long COVID symptoms. Is that available in IGN as well? And who can actually make use of these services?
Yeah, the IGN also provide the pulmonary rehab to our COVID-19 patients.
What does that look like? What does pulmonary rehabilitation look like?
It's a lot of the activities need to give to the patient. We give the exercise to the patient, mainly basically exercise to lung exercise, and also the way to how the patient cope with the activities. Then we more advice to the patient. Yeah. Yeah.
Will these patients be on long-term oxygen and home oxygen? And then also, will this sort of like a scarring, long-term chronic changes of their lungs affect their life expectancy?
Okay. If the oxygenations, like the you do the parasympathetic to the patient, right? For example, that SpO2 less than 90%. So it's alarming me that patient needs something, right? So I need to look at the patient. I need to investigate the patient. I need to do a few tests to the patient. So I need to do arterial blood gases. So I want to know that how many percent of the patient, what's their blood, what the oxygen level in the blood. So if you live less than 60 millimetre, we call, then patient need to plan for long-term oxygen therapy. So this is the patient or patient that need long-term oxygen therapy, then we have to review from time to time, 3 months, 6 months. So after 3 months on oxygen therapy, we need to review again. This patient can cope or not. Some of the patient, if patient's very well nourished, and their brain is very good, the diaphragm is very good, the chest wall is very good, they can rest without oxygen.
Okay.
But some patients is very very thin, the chest wall muscle is not very good, then this sort of patient need long-term oxygen.
You know, Dr. Ashari, we've been in this COVID situation for, 18, 19 months now? And based on the patients you have seen, has the rehabilitation or how you manage patients with long COVID, has that changed at all over time?
Yeah, I can say that 10 to 50% patient might change. But majority, we cannot change it. If they get to category 4, and we already decided that this category 4, whether they need oxygen or not oxygen. If need not oxygen, then we can't continue. And we need oxygen, then we have to monitor patient from time to time.
Okay. And does these complications, do they affect the patient psychologically? I can imagine because,
yes.
You know, what sort of support is there for patients for, as far as their mental health is concerned?
So we, basically, when I saw the patient, I explained to the patient what happening to them. And then what necessary need they need to do when they have a problem. So that's then we have the in the IGN we have the counselor to discuss with the patient what's going to do what the patient has.
Because it can be quite frightening, isn't it? When you are
yes.
You have been healthy and then suddenly post COVID you are unable to, you know, just take a couple of steps and then you're out of breath. That can be really quite frightening for anyone. So when people come in, when do they know they actually need rehab? Are there any sort of benchmarks that you look at before you decide they need rehab?
So we base on the performance and we base on the lung function, how bad the lung function, and we base on the CT scan. We call it HRCT. So how bad the lung, and of course we based on the I already mentioned about lung function. Based on the one is the status of the patient, how look like patient able to cope with activity or not. Number two, I had to base on the look at the X-ray, look at the CT scan, and number three, I had to base on the lung function.
Okay, and given that you know we would like you know 80% of Malaysians have been vaccinated, which is fantastic, right? Do you think that it is effective at protecting against long COVID?
I think if we give people vaccinated, they might protect the lung, but not 100%. So it might be 70 to 80% protected from the COVID-19, unless we have got new variant of virus.
Okay, so fingers crossed we don't find another strain or, you know, fingers crossed. Come on, we can just visit Langkawi. We want to see the rest of the world, so we don't want any more mutations of this virus for now.
We're done with COVID. Yeah. That's it. You know, by October, that's it. We're done with it.
Would you have a message for us, Dr. Ashari?
Yeah, I think for those people that don't want COVID. I think the best thing that we have to follow the SOP. That's the mask, SOP. So we have to social distancing, use the washing our hand, and wear the mask. This must be. Number two is the vaccine. I think that everybody should take their vaccine to protect the virus. There's no other way, because so far we don't have the medicine that can kill this virus at the moment.
Okay. I'm just going to, before I go back to George for his message, we have one last question. Can you prevent lung fibrosis during treatment?
This is a very difficult question to answer, actually. As I mentioned just now, the steroid might help to prevent the inflammation and prevent the lung fibrosis. But if you got, if the lung involved more than 50%, I think you have no way to treat this patient to get the complication lung fibrosis. I think if the more 50%, many patients having lung fibrosis, no other way to protect it.
Okay, George.
Dr. Ashari, I have another quite interesting question.
Okay.
I mean, a lot of people during this pandemic started rushing off and buy these oxygen concentrator. Can you please tell us a little bit about this and what sort of impact it will have to prevent you from getting it? And also, will it really make any difference if you really caught it?
Really? How come I didn't know that? I don't have one.
Okay. So,
are these oxygen tanks?
No, they are so-called oxygen concentrator that, you can just buy them from Lazada. I'm sure you come across that every time. Yeah.
Right.
People were rushing out there to buy these things so that they put them at their homes.
I think no need to buy oxygen concentrator unless you got advice from Dr. Nathan to buy the oxygen concentrator. It's because the virus, when you go to lungs, if the virus infected more than 50%, then you worry about your oxygen level. So when the oxygen level, you have the pulse oximeter, you have to buy the good pulse oximeter. When the pulse oximeter shown that less 90%, so you try to do more exercise first. But if you less than 90%, then this is start worry. And you go and see doctors. And I'm sure the doctor will further investigate why the SpO2 too low. And when do SpO2 less than 90%, usually I will do the arterial blood gas. If the arterial blood gas then less than 60 millimercury, then I will tell the patient, look, you need oxygen to use oxygen. Because our activity in the lung, our activity in this, our system, brain, heart, liver, need the oxygen. Usually more than 50% is enough. More than 60 millimetre is enough.
Okay.
So less than 60 millimetre, they might be breathless and it's not enough oxygen.
So what are you saying, that we shouldn't buy? Don't waste money, is it? Is that what you're saying?
I think they don't waste money. You need to consult the doctors first. I think to consult the doctors, make sure you needed
oxygen. Because Mira, these things are not cheap. They're about 5,000 ringgit.
Right.
they're just basically a device that will just make your oxygen level higher than the air oxygen level of 21%. But a lot of it, I'm sure out there, it's some fake kind of concentrator, and then basically cashing in on the fear of the general public.
You have one at home, George?
No.
I suppose you don't. You got access to the hospital, don't you?
No, yeah, indeed. Well, I think during that time, people saw how terrible the crisis was in India, and then and many countries that they are short of oxygen. I think we have been very lucky that has never really occurred in our country. Isn't that true, Dr. Ashari?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I've seen that people going to rush to buy oxygen. When I think the doctors is to advise them. Don't rush to buy oxygen. And if you need to buy oxygen, you need to consult, because not many oxygen concentrator having the, we call the good to give, because they concentrate from the air and go to the machine, and after that give to you. So it depends on what type of machine you buy.
Okay.
You have to buy a good one, good machine.
Okay. George, your message.
Mira, most memorable thing from this evening is that the lung function has a surface area of a tennis court. And when half your tennis court is gone... half a tennis court. When half a tennis court is gone, the ball is no longer in your court. So you know what to do. Stick to the SOP and keep the balls in your court, okay?
Thank you for joining us today. Dr. Ashari Yunus, consultant pulmonologist from Institut Jantung Negara. Joining me also my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. This Friday, speaking to us about recovering from COVID-19. What next on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.